This is MSO News Sports. I'm Bill Newell along with Rick Moore and Essex County District Attorney Jonathan Blodgett. And District Attorney Blodgett, welcome, and it's great to have you with us.
Thank you, guys. I'm glad to be here.
First of all, congratulations, I guess, on being president-elect for the National District Attorneys Association. Tell us about that, maybe about the organization, and then about being president-elect.
Sure. Well, I'm really truly humbled and honored that my peers elected me to be president of a great organization. The National District Attorneys Association is the voice for America's prosecutors, and we have 5,000 members, and 2,600 of those members are elected district attorneys from all over the country. Our primary purpose is to train young prosecutors to help make them better attorneys and better prosecutors in court. But we're also on the front edge or the front lines of criminal justice reform. We lobby Congress as you know our society changes evolves, and we make changes in the criminal justice system. So it's a great honor, and it'll be a great challenge, and I'm looking forward to it.
Do you have anything specific that you're kind of looking at, or a direction or interest that maybe you didn't just mention there?
Sure. I mean, there's a couple of things that I'd like to get involved and put my mark on. One is the John R. Justice Act, something Congress passed a number of years ago, which would help provide student loan relief for young prosecutors and public defenders. I think it's so important that in this day and age when we want good people involved in the criminal justice system, that we help them get a break in terms of their the wages are very low, as people I think understand and realize, is for assistant district attorneys, and student loan relief for these kids who come out into the world after they go through law school and take the bar exam with six-figure debt is a crushing burden. And we're trying to get the John R. Justice Act now funded, which would give kids up to $10,000 a year for 6 years, or an aggregate of $60,000 in loan relief to help them with respect to the low pay they have, so we can get and guarantee good people in the criminal justice system.
In the in that context, are there you know, you see budget problems all over the country. Are there young people coming in? Is this organization, across the country, is it sustained? Do we have like sometimes you see a teacher shortage or that kind of thing? How's that working?
It's the biggest obstacle we have and challenge, and it's my biggest lament. A good day for me is when someone's sitting in your chair right now and I get to hire them, an assistant district attorney, and they're enthusiastic and they want to do good things and they want to make a positive impact and change. And then the worst day is when they come back and sit in that same seat and tell me they have to leave because they can't afford to stay. Mm-hmm. That after a number of years, maybe they're with us 4 or 5 years and they're making in the mid-40s and they can't afford to get a house or a condo, get a car, get married, and because they're so saddled with debt from law school and they love the job, but they just can't afford to stay here. And this often happens when they're just getting really good at what they do. They know how to try a case, how to value a case. So it's a hard day. So it really goes in the extremes, and we have a real issue keeping and retaining lawyers. I've got very dedicated people who have been able to make a career out of it, particularly in Superior Court, but retaining people that we'd want in district court is a daunting challenge.
You're involved in, you know, working with the Essex District Attorney's drug diversion program. We hear so much about the opioid problem, other drugs, of course, on the forefront as well on that. So tell me about this program. What's the purpose of the program, and how is it working?
So the drug diversion program is modeled after our juvenile diversion and youthful diversion programs that we have in the office that have been, I think, quite successful, giving kids a second chance. Kids make mistakes. We understand that. So we had expanded our juvenile diversion program for juveniles. We created a youthful diversion for kids 17 to it had been like 21. We've expanded it out even further than that, so that if they commit a criminal offense but it doesn't involve an act of violence and they have little or no record, we want to give them a chance to not go through the criminal justice system but go through diversion. And diversion is work. It involves many components. The most important component is there's accountability, but they have to do certain things in order to complete their diversion obligations. And then what brought them to our attention ends up, frankly, going away. Sometimes restitution is involved. So it's a program. Hundreds of kids have gone through it over the years. In 2007, I created the drug diversion program, modeled after our other diversion programs, received a little bit of state grant money, and our goal was to take people who found themselves in either the throes of addiction or just starting to head down that fateful road and give them an opportunity not to go through the criminal justice system, but to get actual medical help, both in mental health services and also for their addiction. It's a program that I strongly believe in. We've been able to expand it. We first started it in two of our eight district courts. We have eight district courts in Essex County. Now we have it in all eight district courts. We started it with people. We were targeting people between 18 and 25. Now we have no age limit. And the whole purpose here is to get these people the ability to get help and help themselves. It's managed through Bridgewell. They were our successful healthcare provider. We work extremely well with them. They do the intakes when someone's coming to court, and we have both pre-arraignment, which is important, and post-arraignment. So sometimes we're able to offer it, if it's applicable, before people even step foot in the courtroom, and we tell them if you complete the program, as set up by the clinicians at Bridgewell, upon successful completion, the matter that brought you here will not go forward, and you won't have a criminal record. And we're hoping to get people who understand that they're really sort of at the precipice. It's worked, I think, extremely well. We've expanded it, like I said. I think it helps the community, so it keeps people out of the system and they're not going through that revolving door. But I'm a firm believer in it. And again, working with Bridgewell, we work with school departments, the police departments, it really makes a difference in helping somebody get that second chance that everybody deserves.
I was going to ask you about the health aspect of it, the health care aspect of it, but it's such a complex issue involving, economics, involving education, involving health care when people go into the hospital and so on. So it sounds to me that this kind of program really needs to get out there so people can understand it. But also, you mentioned police, local school resource officers, they would be educated in this as well?
Well, the police departments understand that we have this as an option, and they'll bring it to our attention, someone they believe would be worthy of consideration. I think all the police departments and the police chiefs work with us quite well in that regard. School departments, we have a great relationship with school departments and superintendents who can sometimes identify some child who's having an issue. So we do everything we can to provide whatever resources possible to keep these people out of the criminal justice system. One of the great difficulties or obstacles is that we find that a great percentage of people that we're trying to help with the disease of addiction have co-occurring mental health disorders. So the intakes become very complicated. Because we're lawyers. When we first got this grant, they gave it to us, and we said, look, we're going to give it back to you to fine-tune it. We will absolutely want to create this program and make it succeed, but as attorneys, we don't have the ability to devise a plan of treatment. It has to be the clinicians, and they do that. And everybody who goes through the program has an individualized treatment plan in terms of what they have to have done. And then upon successful completion, we're working on aftercare, vocational care, housing opportunities. So it's really a holistic approach, but more importantly, when the people are done with the program, and it gets extended out for a period of time, if insurance is available, we use it. If not, you're not going to be out of the program if you don't have insurance. But at the end of the successful completion, we stay with you. And I say we, the clinicians and our joint effort to make sure that you have, hopefully, the tools you need to succeed and be contributing citizens.
We are talking with Essex County District Attorney Jonathan Blodgett. I'm Bill Newell along with Rick Moore here on MSO News Sports. And there's also, you've been doing some training out of your office on animal cruelty with local law enforcement. So tell us more about that and the kind of the prosecutorial case history of animal cruelty, say, in Essex County.
So the impetus for this is we were very fortunate to receive a grant from the Stanton Foundation to fund two prosecutors in terms of the investigation and prosecution of animal cruelty cases. The case for us sort of started in this county a number of years ago when we had a successful appeal to the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court about an animal who was being abused over in Lynn. And without getting too technical for the listeners, we were able to convince the court that, like human beings, if someone's in obvious distress and it's visible, that that situation would allow police to take action. So I've sort of boiled it down in very basic terms. But that was sort of a landmark case in Massachusetts that caught the attention of some national organizations. Animal cruelty is an important priority for us. People who see animals being abused are very motivated normally to reach out to us, to talk to us, to talk to the police departments, and we think it's a very, very worthy cause, and we're very happy that we're able to have a unit that would prosecute these cases for some extreme and really horrific cases of animals being abused.
It speaks to, when I've talked to different people sometimes, about the knowledge base that a street patrolman really needs to have, in other words, to do his or her job, that it's much more complex than it might appear. With all these different issues you mentioned, the drug issues, animal cruelty issues, those are just two, but it's very complex, and education has got to be huge.
Well, education is a critical component, and the criminal and what we do is evolving all the time in terms of how we handle matters. I mean, the ultimate goal is to help people make good decisions. The ultimate goal is to serve the public as best we can. And the animal cruelty part is important, but we've been doing trainings for the last number of years on autism, helping police departments understand when they get a call and arrive at a scene, if somebody's autistic, how to handle that, something that wasn't done a number of years ago. So you name the subject matter, if it's something that we can do or something we can work with our partners in law enforcement to better protect the public and serve the people, our citizens, we'll do it. And the autism training is something that sort of is just one aspect that I think a lot of people aren't aware of, but we do that to help our law enforcement partners better understand what they have to deal with. So you name the topic. If it's something that's happening and we can be involved in doing a good job, we want to do that.
We didn't talk about this in a pregame warm-up, but just a follow-up in that, how do you keep up with the literature? Because it seems to me that all the things that you're mentioning now require research, probably regulations and so on, but new stuff comes down the pike every day from above, doesn't it?
That's a very good question, and it's true. But I am extremely blessed, and I say this all the time when I speak to different people. I have a great staff who will bring things to my attention, help me in terms of setting priorities with this office, work to make sure that if there's an issue that we can get in front of before it becomes a real firestorm. That's what we want to do. So, I mean, in this day and age of unlimited information and getting inundated with that, I have to rely upon my staff to bring the things that are important to my attention, and they do that exceedingly well.
I want to back up, maybe get the big picture look here back for your office and how you relate to different communities and partners in Essex County. I know you've touched on some of this already, but just for our listeners, what's, you're countywide, communities are broken up, Salem, Beverly, Lynn, Danvers, whatever, but tell us about the overall interaction between your office and among the cities and towns.
Sure. So there's almost 800,000 people in Essex County. We have 34 cities and towns, and we're rich in diversity in terms of the makeup of the towns. We have, seacoast towns. We have urban centers, and you have to make sure that you meld your services and your perspective to serve all of that. But I mean, we're so rich in geography and history and heritage in this county that it just makes it a joy. But I've always understood, even before I became district attorney, that if you don't have community partnerships, you're not going to be successful. So I make it a real point to sit down with the superintendents every year. I usually do it in October and say, okay, school's been in for a month. Give me a peek over the fence. What's happening? What do I have to be aware of? What's going on? And they tell me that. So I work with the superintendents to try to understand that, to find out what I can do to be helpful. We do we do two big breakfasts every year. We do a policymakers breakfast, in which we invite police chiefs, superintendents, first responders, resource officers, judges, and try to pick a topic that we think would be important and then expand on that. And I do a school safety conference. So this next month, we're doing our annual policymakers breakfast. It's our 15th breakfast, and our topic is childhood trauma. Because what I've learned in the last couple of years through staff and some great partnerships is that so many kids suffer from undiagnosed childhood trauma, which becomes problematic as they get older, and it manifests itself many times in things that happen in the schools, and sometimes those are misdiagnosed. It's trying to understand what's going on with the child, how do you best deal with it, how do you help that child. And it's not just something that may be thought of as being maybe ADHD, but something that that child has seen or witnessed or experienced at a young age that never was dealt with. And now as that child becomes older and gets into teenage years or adulthood, there's going to be manifestations of that. So I thought that was going to be a great topic. We're bringing in some great speakers from California, and then we're going to have a workshop right after that for the schools to be trained in two diagnostic tools that we're going to provide for the schools to help with kids once they come into the system and there's a realization that something is wrong.
I have so many other questions, but talking about the makeup of Essex County, and I'm wondering what the chain of command is for local police departments. For example, up in Salisbury, Chief Fowler up there was telling me that being a border town, fireworks are legal in New Hampshire, right across the street, but they're not legal in Salisbury, and pot ostensibly is legal in Salisbury and not legal in New Hampshire. So, and what you just talked about with school shutdowns and school safety and things like that. So what's the hierarchy if a police department has a question or needs to know about policy through the district attorney's office?
Well, I mean, we field questions all the time from different departments. And like the communities they serve, police departments vary in size. And I always encourage the chiefs. The chiefs meet once a month. I try to make the monthly meeting, the Essex County Chiefs, if there's an issue, to talk to us, speak to us, so that we can hopefully resolve it before it becomes an issue. Mm-hmm. So we have constant communication with almost all of our police departments. You mentioned it really kind of a sticky situation with, you know, border towns always have issues with the other states, because every state is their own governmental entity, and every state has, things that make their state unique. So when there's issues like that, that ilk, then we try to work it out. I mean, and if you communicate and communicate well, normally, hopefully, you can, you know, you can stop the fire before it starts.
One last topic. In the news this past weekend, obviously, the events in Charlottesville, Virginia came front and center. There's talk about a possible kind of get-together in Boston. I'm sure that's going to happen this weekend or not. But hate crimes or those kinds of things, tell us about your office's role in that, say, over the years.
So, and I don't want to jinx myself, but we've been fairly fortunate in Essex County. We have people in this office who are very seasoned and good attorneys and can differentiate between something that's free speech and a hate crime, because hate crimes often involved in some action as well as the spoken word. But having said that, it's been my experience that most of the situations that cause community concern that could be considered to be hateful speech or speech that's offensive to the community involves, in a normal case, a young person. And young people make mistakes. And young people do things sometimes out of lack of maturity or impulse. So we do everything we can to work with organizations like the ADL and school departments to provide services to these kids so they understand the consequences of their actions. They understand the import and the hurt that it causes a community, and get those kids into diversion or some services so that they understand that and it ends. So we're very cognizant and sensitive to those issues, and we handle those as best we can.
Great talking with you. I don't know if there's anything else you want to share with us, but as a closing comment, but it's been great having a chance to talk with you.
Yeah, it's just the only thing I say this to your partner, Mr. Moore. I haven't done a pregame warm-up in a long time, so it's good to bring me back.
Well, there's some mental stretching going on before this all began, I think. All right, District Attorney Jonathan Blodgett with us. I'm Bill Newell along with Rick Moore on MSO News Sports.